Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. Hello, Phil. How are you doing, mate?
I'm doing wonderfully, mate. How are you?
I'm not going to lie, and this is a good place to start this podcast. I feel way better. You know, in the back of my head somewhere, there was this creeping little thing of, I shouldn't really be hoping Aston Villa win here because that means they're going to overtake us for fourth place. And then when they scored that first goal, I reacted like it was a Spurs goal. And in my head, I thought, I've seen Spurs play in the Champions League loads. I've seen us play in the Champions League final. I actually kind of would fancy us being in the Europa League because I think we might be able to win it. And maybe that's a better place for us to be in next year. And most importantly, fuck you, Arsenal. I'm not having you win the league. I don't give a shit. I love seeing you lose as much as I love seeing Tottenham win. And it doesn't matter. I don't care how tinpot that makes me. How are you feeling?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the point. And you can kind of look at it in two ways, in the sense that, yeah, you know, Champions League's good. We all kind of know why, the money and all that sort of thing. We've been in the Champions League loads of times and it hasn't had a huge bearing on it. All right, yeah, you can say it's helped us get the stadium to where it is and all that sort of thing. But it's transient, isn't it? It's a fleeting moment, us getting into the Champions League. Arsenal winning the league is forever. That's always something, again, that they're going to be able to hold over us. We can't hold over getting into the Champions League over Arsenal. Therefore, unfortunately, and you're right, it does strike the tin pot chords, doesn't it? Someone banging on an old tin. But it is what it is. That's what being a Spurs supporter is for me, unfortunately. It's so horribly, intrinsically linked to Arsenal, getting one over on Arsenal or not having them too far ahead of us, that you're right. When Aston Villa were drawing, I was like, come on, Villa, come on. It didn't even enter my mind that what Spurs is, the precarious situation we were in with top four. Not at all. I punched the air when Villa scored the second. It was perfect. And I don't know how, you know, yes, you know, Champions League or Europa League, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't come into it for me. Arsenal losing and bottling it again and seeing all their sad faces and all the fans leaving after the second goal, which basically means that they've just given up. It's perfect. And I don't care. It is pathetic and it's horrible. And it's a terrible thing about it's a terrible aspect of supporting Spurs, isn't it? That it makes us so happy. Even at our own, you know, detriment. But it is what it is. You can't help it.
I think, but what you said to me, like, because remember before we were going into, before that game was happening, I was saying, the annoying thing is, right, we're going to have to hope that Villa win and that means it'll fuck. And you just said to me, like, why is it always us in this situation? Why can it never just be, let's cheer on somebody getting one over Arsenal? Why does it have to be, well, you get to cheer on, you know, you get to cheer on Bayern Munich knocking Arsenal potentially out of the Champions League, but that will mean there's no fifth place champion. So again, it's detrimental for Spurs. And you could cheer on Aston Villa beating Arsenal away. And like you see, seeing all their muggy, horrible, little sad faces and their limp, hooped red and white scarves. But it will also mean something bad for Spurs. But equally, like you say, let's cut all the shit. Let's cut all the point scoring, the waffle, all this. Ultimately, our fates, the two clubs, are just forever tied, right? And seeing them again, fingers crossed, but seeing them probably again bottling the league after actually, and you could tell they were starting to believe this time, starting to get a bit excited. And I fully thought they were going to win it. I'm not so sure now. However, seeing it all fall to shit again, seeing it all go a bit Arsenal-y, and that's I think that's more than fair to call it that now. Spurs have never had a historic bottling in the Premier League, unlike, you know, Arsenal last season. Never seems to get brought up. And people can say, why are you starting the podcast like this? You've just lost 4-0 to Newcastle. Why are you both sat here talking about Arsenal? Because it makes me happy.
Yeah, get what you can. You get what you can with this club.
Yeah.
It's absolutely right. Their failure is just, it's that you can't not enjoy it. You know, being a football fan is 90% enjoying others' failure, right? Because your team rarely ever does anything unless you're, you know, Man City, and even they, you know, they were dog shit for ages. So it's just part of it, unfortunately. And you know, you got to take what you can get. And another thing is that it for me, it's like, I don't think they're going to win it. I don't think they're going to win it. And, you know, everyone's, you know, all the social media, everyone, you know, talking them up and saying how wonderful they are, even after the game, which we'll get onto it in a second. And I, in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm pretty sure it's not just my biases telling me that they don't have it in them. They're just going to do what they always do. And it just confirmed that for me. So I'm elated at that as well. And again, it's, yeah. You should want Spurs the benefits to be all in Spurs' favour, but Arsenal not winning the league is of massive benefit to Spurs.
I think
and
you
I said,
said
this the other couple. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I think you said at the end of a pod we did at the end of last season, and it was so spot on in that Arteta seems to be Arsenal's greatest strength, but also their greatest weakness. Because I don't know if you've seen it already. Did you see his histrionics on the sideline again yesterday when they started losing? He started doing this genuinely childlike mocking of what the referee was doing when the referee was saying, play on, play on. Arteta's going like, play on, play on the sideline.
Yeah.
Easy, you're wonderful. A grown man. What are you doing? You're like a 45-year-old man with children. What are you doing? You know?
Yeah. And it's down to him that they botched it, didn't they? Because didn't he tinker with it and change all of their, you know, their winning side and then overthought it again, just like he did at the end of last season. Perfect, mate.
With his little, you know, his little like zip up super dry coat, his grey suit trousers and shoes all the time. Like, just no man that dresses like that deserves to win a Premier League title, to go down historically, let alone all the, you know, Thomas Partey and other type stuff that we can sort of dance around. And I don't think we need to focus too much on, because there's a lot of people that talk about that much better. And I don't want to use things like that as like a cheap point scoring type thing.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Because it's a bit crass.
Yeah.
It's still a consideration, but I cannot stand them. I can't stand him. And we were driving back from the Women's FA Cup semi-final yesterday while this game was on, while we were on in the car. I found a radio stream of it while we were in the car on my phone. And
beeping the horn as Watkins was scoring.
But Charlotte was saying, like, you know what would be great? And like, this is it. She's saying, do you know what would be great? I know they've done the FA Cup, but what would be great is after we've just come through this period of Kane going, Dembele, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Carl Walker, Danny Rose, Christian Eriksen, Dele Alli, Sonny coming towards the end now, Hugo Lloris going, all our, you know, our golden era, really. That team, that brilliant, wonderful team that really made us believe for a while, to come away winning nothing. If this Arsenal team does the same, if they can feel that same pain that we do, if in 2 or 3 years' time they can be sat back being like, God, we had Declan Rice, we had Gabriel, we had William Saliba, why didn't we do it? And it was all in their hands. They can say whatever they want about Pep Guardiola, about the riches of Manchester City. They fucked a home game to Aston Villa, who are a good side. But if you want to win the Premier League, you beat Aston Villa at home. You just do. All due respect, you beat Aston Villa at home. And people say, lost to Aston Villa at home. We're not winning the fucking league because we're shy.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, that's one of the big reasons why. But, you know, that was a huge result at the time, wasn't it? City slapped them. We slapped them recently. Yeah, I mean, look, the feeling that I hope that they have is, as you say, what we've just been having, where you had that team 16, 17 and beyond, and it was good. And then you just started to feel it slip away from us, didn't you?
Yeah.
A few players started to not pull up and not be the player they were. Dembele, a perfect example, is he started to wane.
Wanyama.
Tonga now, yeah. And it all just, and that pain of just slowly seeing it slip from your grasp. We've had that. It's their turn.
It was that bit, wasn't it? I think the one for me, it will be like remember when Cole Walker left us, right? There was that feeling of like, fuck you, but also, does he know something we don't? Does he not believe in it? Like, hang on.
That's the first, had this amazing, like, cracking thing.
Yeah,
wasn't
it was that first little like, oh, that's not nice. That's not. That's one of our top dogs that's gone, and really gleefully as well. And I was being like,
couldn't wait.
And I know, obviously, the history looks on him very differently now, but at the time, it was shortly followed by Eric Dier trying to make his way out of the club as well, remember? And we were all again a bit like, why would he want to leave? Like, we're well good. Hang on, what's happening? So imagine this summer now, if Bukayo Saka is suddenly the player that City are like, here you go, here Arsenal, here's 100 mil. And Arsenal has sat there with that, well, we don't want to sell him until Saka goes and says, boss, you know what? I want to go.
Yep.
I want to leave. So you might want to take that money, you know?
They're star boy. That's, yes, huge. Come on. Huge. Yeah, and the thing is, like, as much as there's still quite a lot of football to play, right? And what struck me about yesterday, you know,
they might still
Liverpool,
win it.
Yeah, they do it. Mathematically, they could, but emotionally, they seem like they've lost it already, which is Arsenal all over and Arteta's Arsenal all over, that they just don't seem to have the resilience. And, you know, you can talk about that and say, well, Spurs haven't got a resilience. We're not talking about Spurs. We're talking about how, again, all the fans left. That's when you need your fans. That's when the team needs their fans, is when things aren't going against you and you're still there supporting them. You're still waving those flags saying, all right, there's still football to play. Come on, Arsenal. But they all just left. They all just gave up. Declan Rice at the end of the game just looking absolutely forlorn. It's like, you're still in it. You're still in it, in theory. But they've just given up. And it even got to the point where Sky had to ask Emi Martinez if he thought Arsenal would still win it, which is a bizarre narrative. Because all the Arsenal fans were switching off Sky, that's why, and likely, I'm not going to renew my subscription. So you need to give them something to kind of stay engaged. Bizarre. You know, there's still some twists and turns to come. You know, I don't think Arsenal necessarily drop off massively, but it seemed like their heads are completely gone. So we'll see. Have we talked about Arsenal enough? I feel like probably.
I think so. Yeah. Let's keep it buoyant. Let's just keep it jubilant for now. We were both there yesterday. Congratulations, Tottenham Hotspur women's team, into the FA Cup final for the first time ever. Day out at Wembley for us, Manchester United away, which is, you know, both Chelsea and Manchester United are very good teams from what I understand, but Manchester United is definitely a much more favourable fixture for Tottenham than Chelsea. So a big day out at Wembley ahead. Martha Thomas scoring the winner right at the death. And it was good, wasn't it? It was quite nice, actually, to be in the Spurs stadium. White Hart, God, I've done that again. White Hart Lane.
You're falling for the trap.
I know. I know. It was nice to be at White Hart Lane and actually just see us, because Leicester went ahead fairly early doors against a run of play. And we were both just
Leicester
like...
Leicester looked quite good, I thought, didn't they? Yeah.
Technically... they looked pretty sound. They were very well organised. And it just felt like it was going to be another one of those days for Spurs. But they fought back. And Rosa, friend of the pod, Rosa did quite a good tweet last night, which was, see, it's not Spurs that let you down. It's men.
Hard to argue.
Yeah, which I thought was quite good. But we'll see how we get on in the final, eh, Rosa, before we start getting too smug about it. Yeah.
Save this tweet.
Yeah, save this tweet. Men's rights. Tottenham Hotspur winning something. Oh, I don't know. Tough one for me, that. But it was good, wasn't it, mate? Good day out. Good to see Spurs doing it. And I think we should all try our best to get tickets for the final at Wembley, right? It'd be a good day out again.
Yeah, definitely. I was just surprised. I thought that it would actually be more like sold out yesterday. Obviously, we went, so we can't be criticized for it. But yeah, it was good, really good. Yeah, definitely encourage people to go. Lovely day out at Wembley.
Right, we've arrived at the place that, you know, we didn't want to go to. Tottenham Hotspur, absolutely battered by Newcastle. Again, St James's Park. It's actually becoming one of those places for us, seemingly. And you know what? When things like this start happening, when it starts becoming a bit of a tradition, right? Because you could tell Newcastle started getting quite excited again, couldn't they? You could tell that they could smell blood. I mean, how do we first dive into this one? Because there's a lot to talk about with this, mate. I guess on that note, on the sort of smelling blood, on Newcastle sensing an opportunity here, were they 4-0 better than us? I mean, they were. I think they were. They created enough opportunities and such. But by that, I mean, are Newcastle a 4-0 better team than Tottenham Hotspur? Or should we be saying, why the fuck has this happened, lads? Why have we been battered by Fulham? Why have we been battered by... Who else have we been battered by this year? Brighton. Why have we been battered by Newcastle? Why do our standards slip so much when things seemingly don't go our way?
Yeah. Why have we just taken to, oh, we just don't fancy it, so we're just not going to turn up, and we're going to just drop all kind of aptitude and attitude towards winning second balls, stuff like that. You know, we were winning nothing, and we just didn't seem to be too fussed about it. And that's quite the concerning thing. That I think we talked about it last week, and I was not just because it was at St James's Park, but as you say, we've had those kind of strange, or they're becoming a habit now, away performances, where I think we've actually only won like once in 7 away games or something at the moment, and it seemed like certainly at the start of the season, I mean, our form everywhere was great, but it seemed like we were really good away from home. Teams didn't know how to kind of play against us. So just strange, you know, it's one of these things. It's an old adage that you can get beaten in a football match, but if you can tell that your players aren't too fussed and aren't sort of putting the effort in, that's when it becomes really hard to take. And that's why it was just like, again, the fact that it was 4-0, it could have been way more than 4-0. It could have been another embarrassing, disastrous result. It just seems like the players have kind of given up on the season a bit, which is really concerning.
Let me find the tweet. Somebody said to me, I mean, it could be a bot for all I know, but I don't think it is. At JM47059788053.
Don't say that. Sounds legit.
Yeah. They've said, I think you're being unfair on Ange saying that he doesn't care about top four. I think he was rather saying top four shouldn't be viewed as the be all and end all. You've even said yourself he'd be okay with Europa. I mean, Ange did say he wasn't bothered. And I did, I mean, you say I'm being unfair. I did make the point that I understand he knows, you know, he says it's not the be all and end all. He's aiming for bigger things. But my point was and remains, a manager of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, he's not the manager of Celtic now. And I know that's kind of a cheap stick often used to beat him with, but I do think it is important context. The manager of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, who have sold their best player or one of their best players, most legendary footballers this summer for £100 million, getting into the top four is huge still. In the most competitive, and it is the most competitive league in the world. This isn't little Englanding. This isn't being whatever centric. The Premier League is the most competitive league in world football. It just is, right? For Spurs to finish fourth is major. He just gets a bit shirty, and he's trying to downplay it. He's trying to be bullish and downplay it. But my point was and remains, the optics of that are not great. And what we're talking about here, Phil, is I wonder how much of that does bleed down to the playing style. Because Peter, as I was saying in my post-matching, Peter Crouch, halftime, they cut to the tunnel. They say, Peter, oh, you know, we hear there's been some, you know, a lot of shouting, some raised voices coming from the Tottenham changing room at halftime. What are the lads looking like as they made their way out to the tunnel? And he seemed pretty bemused. He was saying all their heads were down. and they were all trudging out to the pitch again. Well, we got fourth place to play for here. Like, in a grand, surely you want to show this lot. We're on the way to another hiding again. All of their fans, you can hear Tottenham Hotspur, it's happening again, ringing around the stadium. They're up in our faces. They're running at us. They're hungrier for this game. Why isn't that inspiring them? And why does this happen under every single manager that we seem to have? I don't get it.
It is really strange. It is really strange. And again, you have to kind of start to discount the fact that we just keep hiring the wrong person to manage the team or the players. And it kind of, you know, then therefore points to a problem with the kind of ethos of the club, that we're setting ourselves with a certain ceiling and we don't have to smash through that. I think that is the most concerning thing as well about yesterday. It's one thing getting beaten, as I said, but for them to come out after getting the hairdryer treatment, as it were, half time, for them to come out and not really show any reaction, and then for Ange to make a change after, you know, what, 9 minutes into the half, after we'd already conceded the third, when the game was basically therefore done. It's concerning. It is really concerning. And yeah, it's hard to say, isn't it, whether this his comments about top four is ringing in the players' ears, and therefore think that they sort of think, well, okay, well, if he doesn't want us to finish top four, then we'll just keep passing it around nicely and that's going to be enough. I've always got this kind of quite cynical view of footballers, that they don't need much of an excuse not to perform. That's certainly felt like it's been the case with Spurs in the past. As much as I understand exactly what he was saying, and certainly it was quite good what he was saying about when he was signing players, that if they just wanted to come to the to play in the Champions League, then that's not the player we want. I was like, yeah, great point to make. Absolutely agree with you. But I don't think it's just a coincidence that it seems to have had an effect on our approach to games, that we just don't seem to be putting in much of a shift because it feels like there's nothing to play for. That's what it seems like, doesn't it? That there's nothing to play for.
And I just don't know why that hunger isn't there, why a lot of these lads who aren't Champions League regulars, they haven't been. Somebody like James Maddison, who's barely played in it at all. Why more of these lads wouldn't have more of that desire, like a team like Aston Villa clearly have now, like Newcastle had more so last season. I mean, Newcastle have every right to be thinking they could take fifth place from us now. They might be looking at our fixtures. They might be looking at our recent form and think, hang on, fifth place is there for the taking. And if they start stepping up in the next few games, I would just say, what's our excuse now? I mean, because it seems to be, we've said about, you know, the injuries we've had at certain times, which, yeah, it is unfortunate. And that is annoying. And, you know, as much as I've said on here, we need to learn to roll with the punches a bit more. I do get that. It's early on into, you know, Ange's tenure and all that type of thing. So I think he can have a bit of a pass on that front. But the one that seems to be keep getting trotted out at the moment is the whole, well, you know, it's just difficult when you play a system like Ange's against teams that put up a low block. It just doesn't mush for me, you know? And Newcastle didn't. But the ironic thing is, Newcastle did anything but a low block and we got absolutely battered. So kind of blows that one out of the water, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And I think that I've always sort of had this feeling that about managers, not that I know anything, of course, but one of the biggest assets for one of the top managers is that they can adapt. And I don't mean throw out completely your ethos, because, you know, I think his ethos is not necessarily play a certain way in terms of a formation. It's more about how you approach the game. You know, you're always trying to score. You're always trying to get the ball forward. That's fine. But there still has to be some adapting in there, right? Especially when a team is on top of you. And all right, you know, we might drop back and our fullbacks actually become fullbacks and stuff. But it's this stubbornness that is concerning at the moment. You know, again, it's still early, we're still up on where probably we expected to be, as much as, you know, how the season's gone, that's probably changed our perception of things. But you do, as you say, going back to your point, I mean, it's harder to be Tottenham Hotspur manager, despite them having, you know, in theory, better players, than it is being a Celtic manager, just because of the calibre of opposition and, you know, where their standings are in the league and stuff. So again, it's not really to criticize Ange. It's just an observation, really, isn't it? That it hasn't been working. It hasn't been working the last month or so. We've got results and we've won games, but it just hasn't been convincing. And I think that's the point. It needs to be for us to have the proper kind of faith in it. And I think that it's fair to say it needs to be convincing. And it doesn't need to be necessarily convincing every game, but there needs to be kind of a show of sometimes it doesn't work. But when it does work, it works really well. And we're like, okay, we see what we're building to. And he's the one who talks about progress. He's the one who talks about the way we're playing. It's not necessarily about where we finish. It's about where we're playing. It's like, well, we're not playing very well either. So our progress on both accounts is dipped. Again, early days, it's fine. It's not like panic stations where you have to like pull the plug on the whole thing. But it's difficult, and it's not particularly enjoyable at the moment, as seeing us limp to the end of season, because I've seen us limp to the end of the season most seasons, right? And it's just a bit like, just frustrating, and it's hard to sort of get up for, and it's hard to be sort of to be really positive in the moment. You know, again, you take a step back and things are much better, but we do podcasts every week, so it's a in the moment reaction, right? So it's only kind of fair to and accurate to talk about that.
Yeah, just I don't know. I mean, I think really sort of like you say, it's not the kind of an emergency time. It's not. I am actually starting to see a few non-ironic, I think Ange needs to go type comments. And I think, come on, who do we bring in? Look, if Xavi Alonso fancies it, then maybe we're talking. But if not, then come on, let's just stick with this and see how this goes. Because we don't need the upheaval of getting rid of somebody again. And also, I just think it's a bit ridiculous. We've seen tangible improvements in some ways, I would say. I do think my hottest take on the Ange thing is I think the improvements that we have made are being largely overstated by people that want Ange Postecoglou to be a success for Tottenham. That's fine. It's fine to be positive about it. I just think when it starts to bleed out into either I don't need to fucking police what anyone, if people want to argue about whether they like Andrew or not, they can. I just don't think he's been as good, and I don't think he's as brilliant thus far as people have made out. I think I can sort of see certain bits that I'm not as happy with, you know?
I mean, to me, it kind of brings into doubt all these kind of talking head things that we've heard from the players. That they're like, we love playing this way, we love him, we're doing it. It's like, well, if that's the case, why aren't you putting a shift in for him? Yeah. So again, it's not necessarily that it's Ange, it's suddenly the players have kind of fallen foul of it a bit and they just can't really be bothered. You know, it's strange, Kulusevski, for instance, talking about how he gave a team talk, you know, in the vein of how Ange speaks to players. And then his form has dropped off massively. And, you know, players like Basuma talking about how much they love playing for him and stuff like that. Just not putting a shift in. And then on the flip side, you've got Højbjerg, who hasn't quite come out and said he's not happy. I mean, I don't think he's been as obvious as that, but clearly not happy with his starting position on the bench. And yet he's the one who seems to come on and put a shift in. Again, all right, shop window, whatever.
Shop window, isn't it, though?
It just seems to be a bit of a contradiction in what we were being told about stuff. And, you know, okay, things like influx or be in flux and stuff like that. So it's fine. But it's just, there's still some questions to answer. And I don't think it's problematic to kind of raise that and be objective about that, right?
No. Here's one for you, because we're talking about players. It got raised to me on one of the post-game pods, and I guess I hadn't given it much thought up until this point, until somebody pointed it out to me, and then I couldn't help but try and keep an eye out for it. The sort of the dwindling, shall we say, form of Destiny Adoghi. Do you think he's been because look, up front for me, he's a young player. He's been absolutely astounding. I mean, he's a very young player. He's been astounding. It's going to happen. I'm on balance more than happy with Destiny Adoghi. But do you see that he's perhaps struggled a bit? He's got no rotation option, really. No natural sort of rotation.
I'm not, again, not to say that I'm on a, like a tirade about it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
But maybe it's because he's got Werner in front of him, who doesn't make the right runs ever, who is always in the kind of wrong place, who came in, what, in January? You could probably mark Destiny Adogie's effectiveness dropping off around then. And that's not to say that it's Werner's fault, but again, it's getting used to playing with a different player, a player who hasn't kind of had the time to sort of learn the system and learn the runs and learn the space that he gets into. So it might be something as simple as that. Yeah, Adogie hasn't been as effective. I mean, he could have scored against West Ham and probably should have done. But again, he's just not getting round, is he? He's not getting in. He's not pulling the ball back. And, you know, part of, in order for him to get into those positions, you need the players around you to be doing their bit. Madison isn't doing his bit. He's not been very good at all since he's come back from his injury. And he needs to be good to pull teams apart so Adogie can get into those positions. It's not, I'm not saying that I'm necessarily blaming other players and letting Adogie off. I think that it's a malaise across the board. But I don't think there's a massive problem with him. As you say, he's a young player and he's still kind of getting to grips with things. He started off really well, and I don't think we've seen anywhere close to what his full potential is. So I don't know. I feel like criticising him. The same thing with sort of Johnson to a point. I feel like it's a bit short-sighted. Werner's different because he's, what, 28 years old. He should know better. He should be able to adapt better. He should be better at finishing. So, you know, I think you do have to give young players a bit of a pass in some regard.
Well, let's pile in on Werner then, because, you know, it was a point of contention between you and I at the start of the season, really, when I was like, well, not the start of the season.
Point of contention between you, mate. I was pretty...
Yeah, I was just like, yeah, he's a good lad. I think good value, good money, bring him in. And now I'm totally on the side of, I think, in terms of the bigger picture, I'll go as far as to say I think it would be a catastrophe for Tottenham and just the projection of what we're about if we sign Timo Werner for 15 million. I think we could go nowhere near him now. I'm really there now.
And I think people pointing to the fact that he's got a couple of assists and got a couple of goals is all good and well, but I think they're missing a point that the player in that position should be doing way more than he's able to do. The amount, yeah, the game on Saturday as well, where he was just wandering offside with his back to play and things like that. You can't coach a player if they're 28 years old and they're still doing that sort of thing. They should know better. So, yeah, disaster's absolutely right. Again, he's had some flashes of good things and he's had a positive impact here and there. But long term, I don't think we should be entertaining it at all. And again, like I think like you said on your post-match the other day, yeah, 15 mil's fine. But he's on massive wages as well.
Yeah.
So it just creates a problem for us down the line that we won't be able to shift him. We need to get away from these just do a deal players and do proper kind of, because that's who he is. You know, he's become available. We've managed to get him in January to have a look at him. There's a reason he's on loan and we haven't pulled the trigger. I don't think we should be pulling the trigger.
I think we will, right? That's the thing.
From what Ange said, yeah, it feels like Ange has been really happy with him, which again is a bit of a, look, again, it feels like you've said numerous times, podcasters questioning what a manager's doing when they know very little. But to me, he's just not good enough, and he's never going to be good enough. I mean, he'll be able to do the odd thing well, but the importance of that position to keep hammering and keep putting the pressure on the back line, keep spinning, you know, fizzing balls across the six-yard box. Keep that pressure on. That is what Ange Ball is. If you've got a player who's just going to whiff it over the bar with either foot and can't seem to put a pass right, that just gives the other team opposition encouragement to say, we're coping with this. We can start to get on the ball a bit more. So again, detrimental. Don't think he's good enough. Never have. Was concerned that when we were signing him, think we should get rid. Let him be someone else's problem.
I know all players are going to have their deficiencies, shall we say. But with him, it's just, it's so glaring because he does so much right. And I've spoken about that on here. He does so much right and so much so very well. But the stuff he gets wrong is constant and it's bad. Like his finishing is at times, honestly, it's comically bad.
Yeah. His technique is so bizarre. I don't think I've seen a top level player who, other than just, you know, these, he's got such a unique and terrible technique, hasn't he? The way he kind of hits a ball, passes it. He did it well once against Villa when he scored that great goal, when he sort of opened his body out and put it into the far corner. But then, even then, he took a shot against Newcastle and he just stuffed it down the goalkeeper's throat, straight down the middle. No bend on it, no anything. Strange player, very, very strange player. And I just don't want to be having to have conversations about players anymore like this.
No.
That you're either good enough, all this, like, I'll give him time. Just come on, we're in a position now where we've got to get it right. If we start getting it wrong, then we're just going to be in a really rough position 3 years down the line. So I just don't think we need to take the risk with him that he'll suddenly learn how to kick a football and stay on side.
Nico Williams is right there. 45 mil release clause. If we're as serious a team as we say we are, you've got to start doing stuff like that. It can't always just be a deal. Sometimes just play big money for the big player. And that's not even that big. 45 mil for a player of the potential that Nico Williams might have is peanuts.
Yeah, we'll probably have to, you know, offer him massive wages because, as you say, there's other teams in for him. But look, and again, all right, we don't know what the conversation between Nico Williams and Ange will be. And I'm still off the point where Ange probably needs to have the final say. But again, he feels like he's really invested in Werner. The fact that he didn't take him off against Newcastle and he did take off Son. All right, Son didn't have a great game either, but it's not a good sign. As much as, you know, we can get into histrionics about whether we should or shouldn't be signing him, I think we will. And I just think it's going to be a problem. I just don't think he's good enough for what we want to do. He's not even good enough for what we don't want to do.
Yeah. Do you think he was throwing Son under the bus a bit? Because I think he did.
Yeah, I mean, if Richarlison was on the bench, then I think Son would have gone left. Because, I mean, what else would it? Yeah, but he could have put Johnson. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about throwing it under the bus. I mean, Son didn't look on his game at all. You know, his touch was really bad and he couldn't seem to sort of hold the ball up. I don't know what would be in it for him to throw Son under the bus. He looked quite shattered, Son, I will say. Maybe it's more about that.
He's like 38 now though, isn't he? Come on, give him a break. Like,
Sonny, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's going to get tired sooner or later, isn't he? Like, his game's so high octane that he's going to get tired. Do you know what the main sort of nagging thing about this game and this little period for us is? Because I don't think we were good against Forest. I don't think we were good against Luton. I just don't know how actually good we are still. And not even in terms of, like, well, people say, well, give the system time, give the manager time. I understand that part. But what I mean is, even say the constituent parts of said team or system, I don't know how good they are actually.
No, I think that what the latter part of this season has shown us, you know, you've got your excuses with injuries and whatever. I think it showed that actually we do probably need two more transfer windows at least to get the squad into a better shape, because as much as it started well, the play, you know, you can say if the players are doing everything that they're being asked to do, playing at high intensity, and it's not working, then you'd be like, okay, well, the managers, you know, need to show some flexibility and change it. But again, this weekend's game and the two that you just mentioned, it's just been an attitude or a lack of attitude or a lack of aptitude. And just shows you we need more surgery. But that's probably the takeaway from it all, that we're actually squad-wise not in as good a place as we thought we were. You know, we probably need three central midfielders if this evidence is anything to go on.
What we need is at least one standout, proper worldy central midfielder who build the midfield around now. And I don't actually blame Ange. I don't really see it as a tinker man type deal with the constant changing between who our best central midfielders could be, because I honestly couldn't tell you. And I don't really blame him for not knowing. It's hard to know how all of those players will perform alongside one another. I mean, for me, really, Sarr should probably be the undroppable guy, just because he's young and I think he seems to have the most promise. Bentancur, I think in a blue sky sense, is brilliant, but I'm not too sure he's come back from the injuries all right. And that's fine. That doesn't mean I'm saying he's a bad player, but it also means you have to be realistic and understand that an elite level footballer, when they have a serious injury followed by another serious injury, might not be an elite level footballer anymore. And you have to adjust accordingly.
Or certainly takes time to get back into his rhythm with it. I think actually, you know, Ange is quite sort of keeps his cards close to his chest with everything. Injuries, players coming back, team selections, like most managers are. He did show his hand a little bit when a few months ago he was talking about his central midfield. And he was like, oh, I can't wait to see Bissouma and Bentancur play together. I think during our injury crisis, when we couldn't get people back, I think that was one of his responses. And that was quite candid for him.
Yeah.
I think it showed that that's who he sees in his head or on paper as our best. That's why he's kind of been playing them. But that hasn't been working last few games. And again, you can point to all the reasons why. But and again, this is what Ange is talking about, you know, we're still in progress and we need to see how things go. So player form is one thing, and he's trying to work out who his best central midfield is, because that's so important. You almost need one of these players, like I said to you yesterday, that is the type of central midfielder, like every team would need this, but a central midfielder who does the role of two men or two players, right? Your Kante, your Dembele, Essien, those sorts of players who can just manage a game, and it just gives you so much more flexibility because they do so much work. We don't have that. And in fact, our the performances have shown that the two that we do have in there are playing as effectively as one would, because they're just not affecting the game. They can't get in the game. It's just not working for them. Again, does that mean we ship them out? No, not necessarily, but there's work to be done, isn't there?
I do feel like maybe, and this is just me looking for reasons as to why it may be, maybe the malaria's had more of an effect on Bissouma than we give credit for, because I actually can't quite believe just how far he's dropped off from the start of the season, because he was astonishingly good at the start of the season, and he looked exactly like this player that we're both saying we need now.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the fact that he, at the start of the season, he was so far up the pitch. The fact that he got sent off for diving in the box against Luton, was it? I don't think he gets anywhere near the box nowadays, rarely, certainly. So maybe there's been flashes of that recently where he has kind of progressed. And it's one of these things. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the scouting reports for all of our opposition, when they come to play us, they're like, don't press the centre-backs, press Bissouma, or press that player who drops in.
Yeah.
So so that's another thing, and it's about him adapting to that. But you know, that's one thing. He's not good on the ball either. He hasn't been good on the ball at all. So yeah, loads of questions, and those sort of answers that again will only be answered in time. And that's, I think, probably for me certainly where the frustration is. It's like, how much more time? How much more time do I have to give? Be patient. Yeah, I know, but 41 in a month. Give me a break. I've seen it all.
I do think this frustration can, you've seen it all other than the really good bits.
Yeah. I've seen all
varying degrees of
how not to do it. How not to do it.
I think one of the things, I guess, the way in which we can flip this to make it a sort of positive, and I mean, it is still wrapped up in a bit of a negative, just in the sense of us not really,
it always would be.
Yeah, knowing how good or not we are. But I look at this running and I think on paper, given how we've played in the past couple of months or so, let's say the last month, just to narrow it down. And then when you consider Arsenal up next, North London derby, then I think Chelsea, then Liverpool, City.
Got Burnley in there as well somewhere. Yeah, I don't know Burnley if it slots in there, but yeah.
You could be looking at four losses and a draw, maybe even. But you just don't know with this Spurs team, because we could sharpen the North London derby. We absolutely could. And I mean, and how sweet would that be to just put that final little nail in the coffin for Arsenal, you know, in that one.
Mm-mm-mm.
I've still got that horrible feeling that it's going to be a despicable afternoon for us. I'm not going to lie, that one. But I'm more hopeful now that their heads have dropped a bit after the game the other day, right? Looking at the bigger picture on this, I can't sit here and say, oh, and this is why, you know, I kind of refute when people say, are you being negative or this or that? Because I don't think I am, because I'm not sat here going, well, we're going to get absolutely nothing from these next games. Because you know what? In the back of my head, I'm like, yeah, all right, I can see us losing to all four of the big team or three of the big teams in Chelsea, chuck them in there as well. But at the same time, could I see us beating Arsenal? Yep. Could I see us beating Chelsea? Yep. Could I see us beating Liverpool? Annoyingly, yes. How annoying would it be if this is the season we win at Anfield when they're vying with Arsenal for the title, for example? Can I see us beating City? Yes, of course, because we always beat City. So I'm not going to sit here and say it's all doom and gloom for Tottenham, because I think what I do always keep in the back of my mind, at least, is that we are a capable team. We are a very good team on our day, and we can beat anybody. And whether he's getting on a bit or whatever, when you have a player like Son Heung-min in your team, you can beat anybody, really. You know, if it's a good day for him, then it's generally a good day for Tottenham Hotspur, right?
Yeah, it's a question of motivation, isn't it? And that's why I've got the same, I wouldn't say necessarily confidence about the Arsenal game, but I'm confident that they'll be up for it more than they were against Newcastle. That's the kind of the glamour tie that they'll all be looking to. Maybe that's the only game that they're even thinking about with the run into the end of the season. But motivation. We've got no motivation now because finishing in the top four doesn't matter. And we've kind of wrestled on our laurels thinking, well, fifth Champions League as well. So let's not knacker ourselves out, especially given there's a European international tournament coming in the summer, which I don't think we can discount as a thing that's in the players' brains. If they're being told, oh, we're still a work in progress, it doesn't really matter if we win or lose, it's about how we play, they'd be like, oh, I'm just going to subtly not do enough to kind of risk anything. I'm going to vie for a place in my international team and then go from there, because my manager's literally said there's nothing to play for the end of the season in terms of position. So I might be being harsh, but I think it's probably happened before in football where players sort of down tools because they want to be fit for a World Cup, or, you know, put their World Cup place before their club side if their club side hasn't got anything to play for. It's not necessarily negative. It's just we're reacting to what we've been shown. We've been shown that the players sometimes can't be asked, can't be up for it. I think they will be up for the Arsenal game for many reasons. The atmosphere will be fantastic, obviously. Arsenal, aren't we off their fourth game in 10 days or something?
Really?
During which they could be binned out of the Champions League, further behind in the league title race, coming to us. You know, they might then want to put a stamp on their season by beating us, but it still gives us something to aim at. So we beat Arsenal, everyone will look back on this season being like, it was class. So
we need to make it a despicable afternoon for them, though. Do you know what I mean? It has to be one of those vile atmospheres inside the ground, and I don't think have we seen one of those in this stadium yet. The vile, do you know what I mean? The scary, the horrible one. Have we seen it, do you reckon?
Not to my mind. There's been good atmospheres, there's been great atmospheres, but not that sort of like needle where they're just like everything the ref does is screaming down his neck, that sort of thing.
Because
I don't think we've really
the last North London derby in the old ground, 16-17, was was foul. Do you know what I mean? Like we were smug, we were celebratory, but we were also on it. Do you know what I mean? The whole fucking ground was shaking. All the way up the high road was ag. It was needle. It was, you know, I don't condone football hooliganism and absolutely blah blah. However, you know, a bit of Gucci.
He doesn't condone it, but he does like seeing it.
A bit of Gucci at the football.
Joking. Yeah.
A few meat wagons lying in the Seven Sisters.
A bit of needle, a bit of crackle in the air. That's what football's about, right? That's what rivalries are about. If you don't have that, then you don't have a rivalry with the team. So, yeah, again, as mad as it is to say, I'm looking forward to it because Arsenal still have the ability, despite what we've all just said about how good they can be, or you know how their heads are dropped and they don't have the bottle for it. You know, they still could come to us and absolutely wipe the floor of us, regardless of what we do. But it's set up nicely, isn't it? Set up nicely. Spring afternoon on a Sunday, 2 p.m. Love it.
Have it. One last thing on that Newcastle game, because we sort of not mentioned them at all. Isak, Gordon, and Gumiérrez. Imagine if you could just slot those three straight into this team.
It's what we're missing, isn't it? I would say that sort of
literally those three. Bite, pretty much, I would say.
Yeah, that's what we lack. We've got similar players to them, but we don't have the sort of players with that bite, right? It's that sort of, as you're talking about, that sort of nastiness, that sort of dark arts element. I mean, Isak's not so bad on that. Obviously, Callum Wilson's much worse. But it's that sort of element that we're missing that are just going to be like, you know, take the game by the scruff of the neck or something. And yeah, you're right. So upgrades needed on this evidence.
Isak is unreal. Like he's really good. He's really good. As is Anthony Gordon, actually, I think.
He's much overlooked, isn't he? But he's very, very sort of functional, very direct as well, which I think a lot of players can sort of learn from, and you know, very sort of strong as well. So, I'm not too fussed that we didn't sign him still, but as you say, would be beneficial to us.
I'm a little bit gutted now when I see us with Timo Werner, and I think Anthony Gordon's a player that we were linked to for quite a long time, and seemingly. Bulked at the price of, and now you're kind of like, well, that's what it gets you. But then somebody would argue what it gets you is being 10 points behind Tottenham Hotspur right now. And this is why it's so hard to just get a grip on football and where Spurs are at, because for all of this that we're saying, we're 10 points ahead of Newcastle this season.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is down to the start that we had, which was amazing, there was valid title talk just because the mathematics was working out. I don't know if this is correct, but I think we've like got 35 points since the Chelsea game or something. Is that right? Did you see that? It's something like that. I half read the stat, to be honest, so I might be completely incorrect, but the season has just been rough since then for lots of reasons, and there's less excuse for that to be the case now. I think that's why we're sort of frustrated, I think, is the main thing, right? Frustrated with how we're playing, because it seems like the ingredients are there, but it's just not working. It's just not really come together. We haven't been able to recapture that.
Absolutely no fear on Van. I mean, I know Van de Ven has been sort of the source of the memes and everything. He had an almost sort of, you know, comical performance, didn't he, against Newcastle, but
slipped over for the first one, got done with a bad pass for the second. Didn't learn his lesson for the third, I think. He's slid in quite a lot, hasn't he? He's done that quite a lot this season. There's been quite a few games where he's come across in the 6-yard box, slid and just got chopped on. And it looks stupid. So again, young player, great, certain things. Still going to be certain things he needs to work on. And that seems to be one of them. But absolutely no panic about him whatsoever.
Is this making you reevaluate at all what Spurs can be capable of? Or would you, I mean, equally, would you be overly surprised? Let's put it this way. Would you be surprised if this time next year we're sat in a similar position to Liverpool or Arsenal are now, saying, oof, maybe we can win the league, actually. Maybe if City don't win this next game or whatever, you know, do you think we have it within us to get to that place? Or is it that we still need personnel?
I'm not going to discount that because of what we saw at the start of the season. You can say that was only 10 games where people were still figuring stuff out, but I think we were so good in that period. Mm. All right, yeah, we were still kind of lucky in some regard that, you know, we could have conceded way more goals than we actually did through the grace of God rather than more than anything. But I'm not discounting that at all. I just think that there's still some work that needs doing, whether that's working with the players, getting them up to fitness or confidence or whatever it is, or buying new players completely. So I think that, again, like it always is, an important summer. And like we've said so many times, when those summers come to an end and we haven't signed anyone decent, or we've just whiffed it completely. Okay. It's just this, it's this pattern, isn't it? It's so hard to kind of ignore the pattern when you've been bashed over the head with it for 2 decades.
I know. Can't we just have a season where it's like, we just show up and just win? Do you know what I mean? Wouldn't that be nice if, like, one season it's just like, I see a Spurs won the double. So we're just really good.
Yeah, hit our straps, didn't we? And just did it. And that could have been this season. You know, it could have been this season if not for that Chelsea game. If, you know, again, sliding doors, things go our way in that game and we sort of hold together, be outside in the title race. And then everyone would be talking about how, oh, it's a season where teams have had off days. You know, it's just one of those seasons. It's a Leicester season. Tottenham won it by default just because they were the only team in form.
Don't care.
That's a real straw man argument that I don't think we need to necessarily entertain. Talking about this hypothetical time when Spurs.
It makes you angry, though, doesn't it? Those straw men all sat there in the back of your head, being
the ones, the ones you create from your own anxieties and biases, and then get riled up about it, muttering to yourself on the bus or whatever.
Why am I grinding my teeth?
Yeah, getting annoyed over things if you're completely
minor confrontation I had with the man who sort of tried to push in front of me in boots earlier. I'm now playing out different scenarios in my head and getting more angry when I think about, well, I should have said this, and then he would have probably said that, and then I would have said that.
Yeah. And you can't even think about it after like 10 minutes, so you definitely wouldn't have been able to think about it in the moment. And that gets you even more frustrated because you realise how much of a melt you are.
Yeah.
I just took it for myself.
Yeah, I know. When one realises, eh? Dear mate. Next year, right, so I'm thinking next year. If I plan out a roadmap, though, I'll take League Cup and Europa League next year. Right, get that job done. Year after that, Premier League and FA Cup. So get the old-fashioned double. So hang on. So that would be the 24-25 season, League Cup and Europa League. 25-26 season, it'll be the FA Cup and the Premier League. And then the 26-27 season, Champions League. Let's have that.
Yeah.
And then that can be Tottenham's little golden era. And then after that, I can just stop doing podcasts, stop watching Tottenham, and just sit and eat crisps without football being my excuse to do that anymore.
I'll go as far as to saying that I'd train to become a forensic accountant to find some reason why Spurs, the club, should fold after that, just so they couldn't ruin it. Just so that could be it. Just leave it there. Spurs were good, then some foible meant that they had to close doors.
And find out how Joe Lewis's insider trading actually benefited the club.
Yeah.
We're allowed to say that. We don't have to say alleged because he's admitted to it now.
He admits it. Yeah.
That's fine. All right, Phil. Well, thanks for talking today. If anybody listening, anybody watching has enjoyed me and Phil prattling on here, I mean, offering blistering football analysis and insight, join us on Patreon, patreon.com/RTRpod. But if not, if you don't want to do that, which is fine, understand, times are hard, leave us a rating at least, leave us a review, share it on Reddit, somewhere like that. You stalk Reddit, don't you, Phil?
Around just to kind of see what people are saying.
See what's what.
I don't necessarily comment too much because who's got the time for that or energy? It's just get a temperature check of things, right?
Don't need to invite that poison into the mind, do you? Ultimately, the more and more platforms we get to communicate, it just means the more and more places we have fucking arguments.
Yeah, opening up another sluice pipe down your throat of just muck that you just could do without.
And people will say,
just turn those taps off. Turn those taps off.
That's just you, a jaded millennial, saying that. Be helpful. You fucking shut up. Everybody knows all that people do is argue. Just weird, territorial beings. It's only a few thousand years ago we were pissing outside our cave to let people know this is where Ugg lives. So don't.
It was only a few hundred years ago where we were chucking our muck out of the window down onto the street below that we then have to go and walk through. So come on, give us some credit.
Chuck our muck into each other's brains through little electronic devices that we're just, you know, absolutely inextricably connected to. So that was an interesting way to end that pod. But yeah, thank you very much, everybody. Have you got anything to add, Phil?
No, not after that. I'm all talked out.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.